Walked her to the plane in Phoenix. I said, say hello to your mama. She couldn't even look me in the eye. I drove out to the desert just like nothing happened. But somewhere in the darkness I heard her say goodbye.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Seattle-based Boeing facing headwinds over quality control issues and now questions about an apparent suicide of a Boeing whistleblower in South Carolina emerging.
A Charleston police report obtained by ABC News says on March 9th in a hotel parking lot along Savannah Highway, they found John Barnett's body. He was holding a silver gun in his right hand. A worker had heard a pop from Barnett's vehicle about 30 minutes before police arrived. Police are promising a thorough investigation. Barnett worked for Boeing for 32 years. He had been involved in litigation against Boeing and was deposed by Boeing lawyers last week. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Today, Israeli forces confirmed dual U.S.-Israeli citizen Itay Hen, believed to be one of the hostages held in Hamas, was killed in the October 7th Hamas attacks. The president offering condolences to the family. Five Americans still believed to be captives. And Americans paid more for goods last month. Consumer prices edged up. This is ABC News. A Romanian court has ruled that social media influencer Andrew Tate and his brother will be extradited to the UK.
Accusations of sexual aggression date back around a decade. The brothers deny any wrongdoing. Lawyers representing four women say they wrote to British police to request the action over fears the Tates would flee Romania. The Crown Prosecution Service here in the UK had examined the claims, but in 2019 decided not to proceed with a criminal case. The alleged victims then turned to crowdfunding in pursuit of what would now be a civil case. Tom Rivers, ABC News at the Foreign Desk.
Officials in India announcing new steps to implement a 2019 citizenship law that excludes Muslims. The Citizenship Amendment Act provides a fast track for citizenship for people who fled to India from Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and Pakistan before 2014. That law excludes Muslims who are the majority in all three nations. I'm Michelle Franz in ABC News.
When you use Bounce dryer sheets and your clothes look amazing, it's the sheet. Less static in your life? Yeah, it's the sheet. Smelling fresher than ever? It's the sheet. Oh, so soft fabric? Ooh la la. It's the sheet. Less wrinkles on your clothes? You know it's the sheet. Bounce dryer sheets. More freshness, more softness. Less static, less wrinkles. It's the sheet.
Don't you love an extra $100 in your pocket? Have a TurboTax expert file your taxes for you by March 31st to get $100 back instantly. Because no matter what moves you made last year, TurboTax makes them count. That means getting $100 back and 100% accurate taxes only from Intuit TurboTax. Must file by 3/31. Credit only applicable to federal filing fees with TurboTax full service. Offer can be modified or terminated at any time.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, I'm Tad Allen. Today begins the third week of searching for Elijah Vu in northeast Wisconsin. The three-year-old was reported missing from a Two Rivers apartment February 20th. Two Rivers police report weekend searches for the boy through local waterways and rural areas yielded no results. They add that authorities have been following up on numerous tips and large amounts of video submitted to the department. In addition, the City of Two Rivers has established a reward fund for information leading up to the discovery of the missing toddler. The total reward amount has grown to $40,000 after the city fund adds to a $15,000 reward offered by the FBI and $10,000 offered by Manitowoc County Crime Stoppers. Today, the state Senate could reject four of Governor Tony Evers' five picks for the Wisconsin Judicial Commission.
And that action by the full Senate will likely be the first in the Judicial Commission's nearly 50-year history. A Senate committee voted 5-2 in August against confirming Evers' appointees Yolanda Anderson, Jane Foley, Janet Jenkins, and Judy Zywitz. The nominations of all four are on the calendar for today, along with the appointment of Mary Beth Keppel, whose appointment was approved by the committee 5-2. During a public hearing in August, Republican senators grilled Jenkins, Keppel, and Zywitz on when Supreme Court justices should recuse themselves. At the Capitol, Bob Haig, Wisconsin Radio Network.
A jury found a Green Bay man accused of a double homicide guilty. Richard Sotka was convicted Monday of killing his girlfriend, Rhonda Sigelski, and her friend, Paula O'Connor, inside Sigelski's duplex early last year. Sotka was tracked down and arrested in Arkansas the same day the bodies of the victims were discovered. You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
Wondering how to choose from all your spring break options? Pop quiz. Is your family into monkeying around, airbending on a flying bison, or diving into slime? Or all of it? Mall of America. Go bananas on the new Boots Banana Swing Ride. Take to the sky and fly with Appa. Then get slimed in the Nickelodeon Universe Slimulator. For the littles, cosmic crafts, and more at Crayola Experience. It's the spring break of choice at Mall of America. MallofAmerica.com/spring.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. The heat stays cranked up for today, too, as we spike to the mid-60s. With winds a bit breezy today, there's a high fire danger risk. Avoid burning. Otherwise, we'll be under mix of sun and clouds as we enjoy this unseasonably warm day. One call to Tax Solutions now will solve all of your IRS problems. 1-800-281-8193. Right now, it's 59 degrees.
This is AM 1430 WRDN, Duran Mondovi at Wabasha. The following program was pre-recorded.
Live from a buzzer-beater entry into the show via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll begin with a conversation with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Then it's Sean Haney from Real Agriculture. And later, Kent Bacchus from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Directly following the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
Beautiful, baby. Beautiful. Uh-huh. You had all four wheels screeching as you went sideways into that parallel park.
I made it.
It was fantastic.
When I get in with 8 seconds to spare, I think. Listener. Little technical difficulty on the handsome newsman's end here, but we're here now. We're here now, and doggone, I'm glad to be here, buddy.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. I am glad that you're here. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson.
Yeah.
And we have got a jam-packed show, as Davis just explained.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of topics that we are going to get to today. And one that, you know, Tyson's closing a pork packing plant in Perry, Iowa.
Yes.
9,000 head a day, Davis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure what the final day of operation will be.
Oof, I want to say June 29. I thought I had it in here somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you got it in the news? Okay.
Maybe I don't. That might have been in something else.
Well,
I'll find it. It's
9,000 head a day.
Yeah.
Is what the plant can handle, about 2.2%. About 2% of daily kill. And what Tyson is saying is, quote, this is according to Reuters,
mm-hmm.
While this decision was not easy, it emphasizes our focus to optimize the efficiency of our operations to best serve our customers. Tyson's pork business had an adjusted operating loss of $128 million in fiscal year that ended on September 30, down from income of $198 million the previous year. It said sales volume fell 2.2%, while average prices slid 7.9%.
Mm.
One of the things that I'm hearing is that it's such a big plant that it's difficult to put another shift on. So if you can't put another shift in place, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. at this plant, then it's better shut down than running. I'm having difficulty getting this all put together in my head, but we're going to continue to work on that story as the week goes on.
June 28th is that date you're looking for. June 28th.
Yep. Okay.
That's
thank you.
Close date.
Thank you. All right. What else you got?
Yeah, man, I got the National Weather Service outlook. One more day of unsettled weather across the PNW in Northern California. Mountain snow is spreading into the northern and central Rockies today. Fire danger across the southern high plains, followed by a chance of severe thunderstorms across the north central plains later today. Rain may change over to wet snow in the northern high plains. Anomalously warm temperatures to expand eastward from the upper Midwest into the Ohio Valley, mid-Atlantic, and northeast through tomorrow.
You know, I don't know if you saw this or not, but it sounds like there's a cyclone about to hit Kansas City again, too.
Yeah, yeah, I hear that. Yeah, a series of cyclones.
Another cyclone championship is about to hit Kansas City tonight at 8 o'clock Central.
I can't comment on that.
Okay.
In February 2024, the annual inflation rate in the United States slightly increased to 3.2%, up from 3.1% in January, which surpassed the anticipated 3.1% forecast. The increase was mainly driven by higher prices for shelter and gasoline, which accounted for more than 60% of the overall monthly rise in prices. U.S. importers are facing a new wave of uncertainty as the possibility of a walkout at East Coast and Gulf Coast ports looms even before formal contract negotiations with dock workers begin. The Federal Aviation Administration conducted a six-week audit of Boeing and a major supplier following an incident involving an Alaska Airlines 737 MAX 9 flight where a door panel flew off in January. The audit revealed dozens of problems at Boeing and its supplier.
Boeing's got a problem. Boeing has got a problem right now dealing with all of these issues. Yeah.
Speaking of got a problem, ADM reported lower than expected fourth quarter earnings on Tuesday after an investigation into accounting practices at the company's nutrition unit delayed the release of its financial results for nearly 2 months. The United States produced an average of 12.9 million barrels per day of crude oil in 2023, well above the prior record in 2019, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. That's the sixth straight year that the U.S. has led global oil production, and EIA pointed out no other country currently has the capacity to exceed the new record. USDA has finalized rules regarding the use of Product of USA and Made in USA labels for meat, poultry, and egg products. This rule clarifies conditions for making voluntary origin claims and adjusts the use of flags to designate origin. The requirements will take effect on January 1st, 2026.
Yeah, we got Kent coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Well, the recent escalation between Ukraine and Russia saw significant development as Ukrainian drones struck several regions across Russia, marking one of the most extensive attacks attributed to Kyiv in recent times. Let's end it there.
All right, yeah. Actually, Kent Bacchus is coming up at the end of the show. We'll talk about the Product of the USA label at that time. Thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hello, Chip.
Hey, animal ag's been targeted as a source of GHG emissions that could be reduced. What are dairies doing to get a better understanding of what they can do to reduce those emissions?
Well, yeah, I think that there's a lot of advancements that's happening when it comes to technology, and the back end of the cow is no exception. I mean, they're advancing these through the digesters, and so many digesters are happening out west in California and really here in the Midwest too, Chip. But I would say on technology, on beyond just the emissions on what they're doing, is just the impact that technology has on dairies, from robots to cow sensors, cameras. It really helps us understand the cow's behavior, their health, the milk quality. I could go on. And of course, labor efficiency comes to mind, whether it's, again, dealing with digesters or anything else in between. And a lot of producers lean into the conversation. But, you know, when it comes to the current milk price, it's hard to really think about making investments, especially when it's going to come to a digester. But Chip, you know what I would say is that having these conversations costs nothing. So it's essential to bring people to your farm, get these leaders, if you will, around the table to help evaluate that technology's ROI. And because it's complicated, right? It's not all just about more pounds of milk. It's about a healthier cow, a healthier environment. There's so many variables. So, you know, I think when it comes to dairies and when you think of technology, man, the advancements that we have made are pretty incredible. And RNG and carbon and, the digesters, you know, they're exploding across the country.
Yep. Yeah. And if the conversations aren't happening, we're not figuring out what really works and works best for the process going forward. So conversations have got to happen. Good stuff, Karen. Thank you.
Thanks, Chip.
That is Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Make sure that you get more on this story. www.dairyherd.com. All right. Beef and pork exports off to a good start in 2024. Dan Hallstrom, USMEF, is next.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
When we told growers that Bayer Premium Trifold Herbicide for corn delivers visibly clean fields for up to 8 weeks, they were a bit skeptical.
We'll see how it works.
So we decided to prove it. We set up cameras in multiple cornfields, treated them with Trifold, and filmed for 24 hours a day. For 8 weeks, we saw a variety of weather conditions, and Trifold worked. See for yourself at TrifoldInAction.com. Trifold is a restricted-use pesticide. Consult your state pesticide regulator for specific restrictions. Read and follow pesticide label directions.
Potential. It's the one thing that farmers work tirelessly to reach. Sometimes it takes more than just sweat equity. It takes real financial backing. And whether it's land, equipment, or a little help to make the most of your operation, FBN Finance is the partner for you. At FBN Finance, our Farmers First philosophy means that we have a team of ag experts that looks at each farm and farmer's unique needs, giving you a loan package that fits your goals. And now with FBN Finance, you can get $500 off closing costs for farmland loans over $250,000. With great rates, instant approvals, and a pre-qualification on farmland loans, FBN Finance has everything you need to be your partner in the fields and with your finances. Start your farmland loan today at fbn.com/agritalk or call 833-FBN-LEND. That's 833-FBN-LEND. FBN Finance, more than a lender. Financing offered by FBN Finance, LLC, and its lending partners. Available where FBN Finance, LLC is licensed. Terms and conditions apply. NMLS ID 1631119.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I taught for 20 years, until I started forgetting my lectures.
Eventually, he had to quit. Getting his early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard, but it gave us time to take control of the situation, together.
I can't imagine going through this without him.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
AgriTalk is brought to you by John Deere. For generations before and generations to come, John Deere is part of your farm and your family. Whatever your technology needs, John Deere has the tools to help grow your farm.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us on this Tuesday morning. A lot going on. A lot going on out there. We got some updated numbers from CONAB we'll be talking about this afternoon when it comes to Brazilian corn and soybean production. But as a matter of fact, we'll get to it here in just a little bit with Brian Grady at the bottom of the hour. Beans are, Davis, beans are 14, 15 cents higher here this morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the look of that.
Yeah.
I hope we can hold on is the thing.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Mid-morning gains of 14, 15 cents don't mean anything if you can't hold on to them.
They make me nervous. I'll be honest. Get me past the noon hour. We'll be fine.
Okay.
Then I can breathe.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Dan Hallstrom is the president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. He joins us right now. Dan, it's great to speak with you again. How are you?
I'm great, Chip. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad that you are here. I want to take a look at how we're starting 2024 with meat exports. But first, I think we need to put a wrap on what was really a good year in 2023, right?
Definitely, yeah. On the pork side in 2023, we ended up the year with a record value exported, just a slight record over the previous one. But the theme on pork has been broad-based growth across many markets. And on beef, while we were down on the volume, the value result was still the third largest year ever for exports for beef. And quite frankly, especially on beef, the very end of the year, the last quarter, we saw some momentum gaining, and that continued into January. So, okay. 2023 ended up being a fairly good year, and we're looking pretty good going into 2024.
Right, right. You know, on pork side, back in 2023, Mexico is so important. So is China. And to have a good year, you've got to have demand from the big markets. And that was there, especially from Mexico in 2023, wasn't it?
Without a doubt. We set a record in Mexico for the year in October. So, that's a function of really all of the different segments in Mexico hitting on all cylinders. It was the demand for pork, like hams, for raw material for further processing as an ingredient. It was demand from retail and demand from food service. And food service through most of last year was booming in Mexico. And you add all that up, and it's a pretty solid performance.
Yeah, that Mexican market is so important for the hams. You want to talk about adding value to a carcass? The hams during much of the year could be dragging the carcass value down, but because Mexico is there to import as much as they do, hams often lift the value of that carcass. Dan, that's how important it is.
Well, without a doubt, and there was a period last year where the hams had quite a bit of a swing in the value side. I mean, they were 80 cents a pound much of the year, but they went up to $1.05, $1.10, and honestly, the demand side didn't miss a beat. They just followed the market and probably contributed greatly to increasing the market. So that's the good news on hams. But honestly, Mexico's a much bigger story than just hams. We're starting to see, you know, some of the primal cuts. Loins, for example, are becoming a much bigger item down there. And quite frankly, we need all the help we can get on loins.
Yeah.
And then you got variety meats. So, you know, Mexico is one of those markets that's really, on the pork side, taking, you know, almost the entire carcass.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. You mentioned a lot of the trends that we saw on beef in 2023. Was there any one market that really stood out and made you say, wow, look what's happening on beef trade into that country?
Yeah, there was. And it was, once again, it was Mexico. And I would say the second one was Central American region. You know, those boomed on the pork side, both of them, Central America as well. And the beef was similar. I mean, we finished the year. It wasn't a record, but it was a pretty big increase over the prior year with higher prices. So, yeah, I think Mexico and Central America last year were kind of the I don't want to say unexpected surprise, but a much appreciated surprise because once again, markets go up, markets go down, and they were in there buying the entire year last year. So that's pretty encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whenever you can attach the word surprise to export demand, that's a positive. So we'll take it. We'll take it for sure.
Right.
So, okay. Let's talk about 2024. The January numbers are in, and pork had a good, strong start.
They sure did. Yeah, we were a little over 251,000 tons, growth of 6% above last year. Same trend lines. Mexico, the leader, Central America right there with them. But there's some other markets that stood out as well. And the big one I wanted to talk about was Korea. Korea did almost 21,000 tons, 53% growth over last year. In 51% growth on the value side in Korea. We'd been hearing from the trade and from our office that activity had picked up late last year, And we're finally seeing it in the numbers, a big, big increase for the month of January. And once again, it's quite a few different cuts that are involved. It's not just the shoulders, but it's variety meats and other things as well. So that was encouraging. Japan was encouraging as well. The market was steady, but a relatively high number from a year ago. So, you know, I think we can attribute part of this rebound on the pork side, and we haven't gotten to beef yet, but beef is similar on the Korean situation, partly a rebound in the food service area, which is much needed.
Okay. Okay, so connect those dots between the surge in pork exports to beef, because beef exports, volume down a bit to start the year, but value up a bit to start the year, continues the trend that we saw in 23, right?
Right, yeah. And I think the takeaway I have, I mean, it's a good month on beef, for especially for a January. You're basically steady on the volume, but the value is up 9%. That tells me that these, even though supplies are down, and which is a negative, we know supply is down, but the fact that the value is up tells me that the biggest question with these customers internationally, especially these big established markets, is, you know, not so much why is the price higher, but when will we have more volume? Because they need it, and they know the value of it, and they're willing to pay for it. So, to me, that in a whole scheme of things, that is a good discussion to have. They understand economics. They understand it'll take a bit of time to rebuild the herd. And I think you're in a pretty good place when that's the discussion versus just a, hey, the price is too high. We're not hearing that in a lot of markets. We're hearing a much more positive spin on the situation on beef.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Talk to me about market development. Where's the focus in 2024? And you know what? I'm not going to leave it general. I'm going to talk. I want to hear what's going on in Africa, because some of those African countries, it seems like there's so much potential there, Dan.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. When you're talking about emerging economies and developing new regions or relatively new regions, Africa is definitely one of them. Southeast Asia is probably another. I think we're getting very aggressive this year in our work to get more boots on the ground in Africa. We are in the process of hiring a French-speaking person to represent us in West Africa, for example. Matt, who runs Africa, is based in South Africa. And then hopefully later in the year, adding more staff in the south central cone of Africa and for the markets of Angola and Congo, for example. So that is the strategy to get more boots on the ground, get a little more exposure into the main, we think the primary regions that can import beef and pork, although it's primarily beef at the moment. And you're right, the signs of potential are enormous when you're talking about Africa. You've got a very young demographic, you've got a middle class that's expanding every year. There's a lot of positives out there. The thing that we're struggling with, and this isn't necessarily a negative, is the supply chain is not well established. That's typical of an emerging new market. So we're working not only in market, but we're working with our exporters here to try to expedite that development of the supply chain. So, a lot of good things going on in Africa.
Yeah, develop the market. Not only develop the market, but help them understand the best way to move that product around the country and to get it to the outlets is pretty important stuff. Dan, I always enjoy the conversations and learning more about beef and pork trade. Thank you so much.
Chip, our pleasure. Thank you.
Dan Hallstrom, President and CEO, USMEF.
In the beginning, there were soybean plants, and something big was about to happen. Except it didn't, because stresses like heat and drought struck during the flowering stage, preventing bloom and so much more. But then Agroxene said, let there be smartfoil.
And the big bloom came because SmartFoil is a biological foliar application that increases pod count and yield potential by reducing abiotic stress. So bloom big in 2024. Ask your retailer about SmartFoil by Agroxene or visit bigbeanbloom.com to learn more.
Farmers are the heartbeat of rural America.
Congress recently invested $20 billion in America's farmers and ranchers, focusing on conservation practices and profits for future generations. Today, these funds are at risk.
You're squawking over $20 billion, that USDA program. It's investment into the future for everybody.
If the funding was eliminated, it could hurt farms and families.
Tell Congress, protect this generational investment in the Farm Bill. Learn more at investinourland.org. Paid for by Invest in Our Land.
Time for Markets Now with
Dairy Farmers. Extend the life of your investment and keep the milk inspector happy when you resurface your mangers, feed bunks, feed carts, and more with a microepoxy surface from Osteoplastics and Supply. The microepoxy surface provides for easier cleaning of feed bunks, less feed waste, offers a non-skid surface, and withstands extreme temperatures and chemicals. You can repair your floors and equipment for less than replacing, and the increased milk production will pay for the installation. Find out more. Visit osteoplastics.com.
Milk markets are lower with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnekins. At the Mercantile Exchange, April milk down 13 to 1579, May down 4 to 1630, June down 7 to 1706, July down 6 at 1771. Meanwhile, the livestock sector is moving higher as the market has attracted traders with both pork cutout values and boxed beef prices higher. The market's finding ample support. April live cattle up 77 cents to 188.37. March feeder cattle up $1.10 to 249.35. April hogs up 212 to 85.40. Corn markets are relatively mixed today after touching nearby resistance and early strength, but then fading. Ethanol margins, though, continue to be pressed by the gains. The daily wire remained quiet. Soybeans moving mostly higher as South American weather should allow for Brazil's harvest to continue to progress past the halfway point. Meanwhile, wheat markets are mostly mixed as the market is consolidating after a few recent trading sessions. March corn now up 6.25 to 434.5. New crop down 1.75 to 471. March beans up 11 to 1176. New crop up 8 to 1180.75. March soybean meal down 380 to 333.30. Chicago wheat March now up a half to 538. Minneapolis wheat May down 1 to 669. With markets, I'm Brian Winnekins.
When it comes to farming and family, the most important thing is laying down roots. Hey, it's Matthew from Bluff Country Feed and Seed in Mondovi, and we want to help you grow your roots. From planting to harvest, we can help you lay your foundation through quality feed, seed, fertilizer, and great service. We know how to help because we know Bluff Country. At Bluff Country, we understand the importance of strong roots in the community and the relationships we build. So plant your roots with us at Bluff Country Feed and Seed.
Just like you, Cenex Premium Diesel is no stranger to the field. In fact, Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. In simpler terms, you get restored power by up to 4.5% and restored fuel economy by up to 5%. Of course, there's always typical number 2 diesel, if you're not into the whole added power thing. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Your Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster distributor is Elsevia Co-op.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us. We've got some news coming out of Canada from Statistics Canada with the acreage intentions for 2024. Helping us get a better understanding of what is going on there. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio, on Tuesday assignment. What do you make of that, dude?
This is amazing. This is great. Midweek edition.
That's right. That's right. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing really good. I'm feeling the stress, Chip, of like having to fill up my bracket here in about a week and thinking about that. And I still have in my head your little comment about, you know, don't count out the cyclones. So, I got to be disciplined there. So, this is a great time of year for sports.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun. And good grief, that Big 12 tournament that's going to wrap up by Sunday. Oh, my gosh. The men's tournament is going to be fantastic. The women's tournament has been fantastic, you know, if you're a Cyclone fan to this point anyway. So
Chip, a lot of people are saying there's more hype or vibe to the women's tournament this year than actually the guys' tournament.
Yeah.
Which is really fascinating. If we have like a Iowa.
And it went chalk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun. Like, can you imagine a Final Four like LSU, Iowa, South Carolina, and like USC in the women? Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
It will be. It absolutely will be. No doubt. All right. Let's get to Statistics Canada and the acreage intentions that were released yesterday morning. What did you learn?
Well, I think a lot of analysts would say it kind of fell in line. So the two main crops that people are paying attention to is what happens with spring wheat and what happens with canola. They are the acreage leaders. Spring wheat's forecasted to be down 1.2% to 19.2 million acres, and canola's forecast to be down 3.1% to 21.3 million acres. My take on this is I think the canola number has a little bit more chance to slide lower. And that's talking to seed companies. Sales are not moving like they thought. Now, do I think it's going to be a significant drop where we have like a 19 handle on it? No, but I won't be surprised if it drops below that 21 million. And, it feels that way based on the dry bias in parts of Saskatchewan and really Southern Alberta, where I am, 5 to 6 years have been what you would call drought conditions. The other thing, Chip, is some of the, what I would call more of the fringe crops, like chickpeas up 26.8%. Okay. That's a drought crop. Oats, not a drought crop, but acres last year swung huge to the downside. Now we're swinging back up 21.6% to 3 million acres. So on those fringe acres, farmers are willing to try out some other crops if they're going to reduce their spring wheat and canola acres.
Well, you know, we've been wondering if that wouldn't be the case in North Dakota this year too. And I wonder if the Canadian numbers aren't maybe showing us that possibility is real for North Dakota for 2024 too. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. You know, added into the North Dakota situation for sure, obviously, is you got corn and beans playing into that equation, which definitely impacts that canola and spring wheat number in that state for sure. But if you're in Montana, North Dakota, especially Montana, the chickpea acre, I haven't kind of looked at some of the forecasts, but I would expect the chickpea number in Montana to also have the same kind of increase because also fits those dry conditions.
Right. Gotcha. Anything market moving in either the numbers that we got or in some of those potential changes that you were talking about, the canola acres in particular?
Yeah, I like the green on the screen today.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's good to see. It feels a little bit different compared to what we've been seeing. I don't know if it's really moving the market, but, last week in a couple speeches, similar to what you've probably heard in the U.S., on say corn, for example, farmers telling me at today's canola price, I can't pencil a profit.
Okay.
High risk crop, really dependent on nutrients, really dependent on Mother Nature really cooperating, not really a drought resistant crop. Yeah. But, related to the markets, if we did see because of an expected reduction in acre, if we did see canola rally into spring to a certain extent, it would bring some people back.
Okay.
But there's a lot of unsold 23 canola out there that people are still trying to market, right? Which is, we've been talking
23 last product
Friday.
Is
That's a
challenge. Yeah, 23 product is a problem in a lot of markets right now. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to switch gears on you, like hard.
Go for
gears.
It.
And as I was out at different events this winter, it's a few times Canadians would come up to me because we'd have a conversation about carbon emissions and carbon programs and so on. And they'd say, hey, sometime you got to get Haney on to talk about the carbon taxes that we're dealing with up in Canada and explain the costs of those carbon taxes. Can you do that? Is it something that can be explained?
Well, the idea is, so a lot of, in theory, a lot of economists will say this is, you know, having a price on carbon or having a price on pollution is a very efficient way to deter people to other options. Okay. So instead of maybe, you know, having that gasoline powered vehicle, you instead have an electric vehicle, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. In practice though, it's going over like a lead balloon.
Yeah.
And we've seen this lead balloon keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger as we've seen the Liberal Party face major challenges in their popularity. You know, if an election was called today, they're going to get smoked by the Conservatives. And a lot of this is all to do with people being very concerned about affordability. And you know, when people have a lot of, when affordability is not a concern, things like the environment, and I'm willing to pay a carbon tax, that, you know, saving the environment's important. Yeah. When money's a little bit tighter and trying to put food on the table and, you know, things are getting more expensive, it's like, well, you know what? Not as important as it once was.
Right.
And it's been very expensive, and Canadians are definitely speaking at this point with their voting intentions as you look at some of the polls.
How expensive is it?
Oh, it's by 2030, it is supposed to get to $170 a ton. What are we now? We're like, I think at 80, I think. I can't remember
but,
what exactly.
What, I know we're supposed it, to it's, I had one person tell me that it's 13% on everything that you guys purchase. 13% just to pay the transportation of any groceries and so on. That you add 13% for the carbon on that.
Yeah, I think it depends on the good.
Okay.
But what is frustrating is there's also GST on top of that. So there's a goods and service tax of whatever that is, 5% on top of the carbon tax you already. So you could see how there's like a tax on a tax.
Yeah.
And this has people very frustrated. And think about it from a grain drying perspective. And I've heard a whole bunch of numbers from farmers. So I don't know if I can put a percentage on it, but you think for every bushel you're drying of your corn, you're paying a tax on top of that. Even though there's no other thing that you can, you know, no other way to power your grain dryer besides propane and natural gas.
Yeah.
And so my advice or my thought is to, you know, the AgriTalk audience is, this is something you definitely do not want in the United States. And our system's a little bit different as the parliamentary system compared to what is in the US. Thank goodness, you should thank your lucky stars that the government has tried to find other ways to, you know, deal with environmental concerns or climate change or however you want to put that, other than putting a price on pollution.
Right.
Because it is, you know, Europe has gone this way. Canada has gone this way, and the most confusing piece of it, Chip, is that as a regular consumer, a citizen, you actually get money back, and so it just feels like kind of like a wealth transfer. It's like everybody, you know, you pay based on your usage, and then people get money back as kind of like a reward. It's a really, really goofy system that the current government is trying to rebrand. But good luck.
Holy smokes! Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. We've got Kent Baucus from National Cattlemen's Beef Association coming up next here with thoughts on product of the USA labeling, the final rule that was out. Give me about 30, 40 seconds on it. What's the immediate reaction in Canada?
I said this on Friday. As soon as I saw that Vilsack was speaking at the NFU meeting, I kind of thought they would go with the final rule as they had presented to OMB. Right. I think Canada's going to wait and see. It's supposed to be voluntary. Will packers go forward with the product USA label? Because they don't want to segregate cattle either.
Right.
Canada does reserve the right to retaliate through the WTO from M-Cool. If this is in any way moves to where it's presented as voluntary, but it's really mandatory, we're going to see some trade tension between Canada and the U.S. on this. And think about if you're a feed yard in the southern U.S. pulling feeder cattle out of Mexico. Right. You got to be super concerned. This is one of the most restrictive labels at this point, really, in the world of the livestock industry.
Yep. Yeah. And we're going to find out exactly what is in the label. But that animal is going to be bred, born, raised, processed in the U.S. if it's going to carry that label. Haney, you're the best. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Chip. Appreciate it.
Yep. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. We've got Kent Baucus next.
Hi, this is Scott Trout of Cordell & Cordell. There are a lot of great dads out there. Sometimes those dads get divorced. For more than 30 years, we've represented men in divorce, confronting the pitfalls that could devastate your finances or harm your family relationships. While every situation is different, our goal is to get the best outcome for you and your kids. Visit CordellCordell.com to take the first step.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Madison area attorneys. 1110 Fourier Drive, Suite 120, Madison, Wisconsin, 53717.
Starting with one store in 1978, Boot Barn has become the largest Western and workwear retailer in the nation. Supporting those who feed, build, and protect America, we offer the largest selection of cowboy boots, work boots, Western wear, workwear, and outdoor gear. With over 500,000 pairs of boots and thousands of top-quality jeans and clothing, it's an honor to support the people who make our country so great. Boot Barn. Keep West.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency on earth, and if you owe back taxes, the news isn't good. The IRS is raising the interest rate it charges on unpaid taxes, and further rate hikes are expected. Most people don't know it, but the IRS adds interest charges to your tax debts daily. So if you owe the IRS today, you'll owe even more tomorrow. And it doesn't stop until you get right with the IRS. The good news is getting right can start with one phone call to Optima Tax Relief, America's number one tax relief firm. Optima's tax professionals specialize in the Fresh Start Initiative, a powerful IRS program that can save you thousands if you qualify. In fact, the experts at Optima have resolved over $1 billion in tax debt for their clients. Call now for a free consultation.
Call 800-783-8055. That's 800-783-8055. 800-783-8055.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
And the Ad Council.
Tristan Beyer is the crop nutrition lead for Western North America at Mosaic. Tristan, when reading the lab results from a soil test as it relates to micronutrients, what should you look at?
I think the main thing that you look at when you look at soil tests is, you know, what are the different thresholds of those soil test levels? You know, zinc, it might be 1 to 2 ppm, boron, it might be 1 ppm, and, you know, we can go down a list of the different micronutrients. But also look at crop nutrient uptake and removal. As yields have increased over the years, many of our fertilizers that we've applied may not have had the micronutrients and been missing that component of our crop nutrition. The higher yields that we have today have been removing greater amounts of micronutrients. So it requires greater attention to detail and making sure that we're applying all of the essential nutrients to ensure that we're meeting the requirements for balanced crop nutrition.
Yeah, okay. So what's the most important thing that growers can do to improve soil that is lacking in micronutrients?
I think the best thing that they can do is, you know, soil tests, identify which nutrients are most limiting, and then try to make those corrective applications. And if you are in a low soil test scenario, you can, you know, apply a little bit higher rates to correct those applications. Because the nice thing with micronutrients is many of them are immobile within the soil, so we can build them up for years to come to benefit us for multiple years applications.
All right, so why are these micronutrients important?
Micronutrients, the name in and of itself might sound a little diminished of value, but just because they're micro does not mean that they are not essential. All nutrients are equally important. They're just needed in smaller quantities. Yeah. When we look at micronutrients such as, you know, zinc, boron, copper, manganese, and so on, the importance of them is in making sure that they're not limiting crop growth and development and that they are applied in balanced ratios for crops.
Tristan, excellent. Where can growers go to learn more about Mosaic's micro essentials?
Go to cropnutrition.com and see a number of different resources that are available.
Thank you, Tristan. That is Tristan Beyer, crop nutrition lead for Western North America at Mosaic.
At FBN Finance, we know there's one thing that unites all farmers: progress. It drives them to wake up early and be better than the day before. And whether it's a new land purchase or refinancing your ranch, FBN Finance has the agricultural expertise to help you reach your goals. Simply put, FBN Finance puts farmers first. With great rates, instant approvals, and pre-qualifications on farmland loans, FBN Finance has everything you need to be your partner in the fields and with your finances. And now, you can get $500 off closing costs for loans over $250,000. Start your farmland loan today at fbn.com/agritalk or call 833-FBN-LEND. That's 833-FBN-LEND. FBN Finance, more than a lender. Financing offered by FBN Finance, LLC, and its lending partners. Available where FBN Finance, LLC is licensed. Terms and conditions apply. NMLS ID 1631119.
AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN. Don't risk your nitrogen investment. ESN is designed to beat the five ROI killers and provide season-long end to your crop. Learn how ESN works at smartnitrogen.com.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us. We got a final rule from USDA yesterday that the cattle industry in particular has been waiting for quite some time. It was made at the National Farmers Union National Convention, I believe it was. And USDA Secretary Vilsack released the fact that the final rule on the, quote, product of USA label has been released. The final rule is now in place. Kent Bacchus is the Executive Director of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He joins us right now to fill us in. Kent, it's great to speak with you again, sir.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you as well.
All right. So the final rule on product of the USA label. What will that product of the USA label tell consumers about what is in the package?
Well, I think, you know, based on what USDA has rolled out in this final rule, there are a couple of different conditions, different scenarios we could see. Okay. But specifically, if a retailer wants to use the claim product of USA or made in the USA, or if they want to use like the US flag or anything else like that, then that means that this has to come from an animal that was born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in the U.S. So that applies to single ingredient FSIS regulated goods, so think steaks, but also the multi-ingredient regulated products, so ground beef. So when you're going to use those two specific claims, then you have to meet all those criteria. There's also another condition on that that, you know, if you're going to use what's referred to as a qualified claim, then you have to be able to document that. So in that scenario, it could be, you know, it could just be processed in the U.S. or it could be raised and processed. So there are some other things like that we still have questions on when it really comes to implementing this. Those same standards will also apply to those voluntary claims. So if you're going to market like product of Montana or product of Oklahoma, something like that, then you would also have to meet those same kind of verification things as you would under that, you know, with those other conditions. So there's still some questions on paperwork and documentation of what all that would apply, but those are really the two main themes. And this applies to the domestic market. When you look at our export products, which are a very important part of our overall, return on investment, export products, they simply have to comply with the requirements of the export country. So This is a domestic facing rule. Exports are, USDA says, are not really going to be affected by it. But, you know, there's a lot to unpack in this. There's over 120 pages worth of information to look through. So we're really trying to dig into that now and see what kind of opportunities are there for producers, but also what potential cost could come with this.
Right. Okay. You said something that I hoped you wouldn't say, and that is we still have questions on this. That's not what we want to hear when the final rule has been released. And I understand that we got to get into the details of it, and hopefully the answers are all in there, right?
Well, I think that's the case. I think USDA has put a framework in place, but you know, there's still a lot of conversations of how the industry will comply with this, or if, because it's a voluntary label, if it is used, you know, if these are used going forward. We have a very diverse supply chain. So I think for some producers, this could be an opportunity. And for others, and for some retailers, they may choose not to go down this road. It's still really early to see how that's going to happen. And keep in mind, the implementation date for this is January 1st, 2026.
Yeah.
So we still have quite a long window there for these conversations to happen up and down the supply chain. So it's kind of hard to predict whether, you know, things are going to, whether, you know, everything's going to be compliant, or whether we can just kind of plug and play on this until we have those conversations up and down the chain.
Right. Okay. And it's a voluntary use. Have you seen any indications, Kent, from the market participants on how widely the label might be used? I mean, I got to believe that if steaks in a package qualify for that product of the U.S. label, that the label's going to be on there, right?
Well, I mean, we'll see. If you look at it, I mean, it's kind of hard to really gauge consumer demand. And I know USDA had a report that came with that, and they really cite that heavily in this final rule. But keep in mind, the product of USA label, the threshold's been so low on that for the last several years that really this created an issue where retailers, packers could just use this one, you know, essentially whenever they wanted to, without much clarification on it. I don't know what the extent of that will be now. We still have to see how consumers are going to respond to this. I think initially you'll probably see some opportunities there, but keep in mind, consumers have really been responding to a lot of the local and regional marketing efforts ever since COVID, and you had a lot of direct-to-consumer sales. You've seen an emergence there. So consumers are really interested in knowing these things. But when you're talking about a national marketing system, I think you know, we still have a lot to learn.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to me that the smaller the regional processors, as long as they can prove the origin of the cattle to begin with, are going to be most interested in using this label, right?
Right, and I think a lot of them can, and that's really what they're leaning on. So
exactly,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and good for them. Good for them. It's you know, we need all the competition we can get out there for in the industry. Kent, great conversation. Thank you so much for the details. I'm sure we're going to talk more about this between now and implementation. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, Kent Baucus. He is the Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Hey, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're going to have a great market conversation this afternoon. We've got Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer. Tomorrow morning, a Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk. I'm the International Harvester.
All right, let's see here. Acuron Corn Herbicide. Powerful weed control? Check. Long-lasting residual? Check. Proven crop safety? Check. Acuron checks all the boxes, which is why it outperforms and out-yields all other corn herbicides by 5 to 15 bushels an acre. Talk to your local Syngenta retailer or visit findmorebushels.com to discover your revenue potential today. Always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.
The Scoop Podcast is where we talk about tight supply chains, emerging agronomic challenges, technology tools delivering ROI. I'm Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop and host of The Scoop Podcast. Join me as I interview leaders from across the ag retail sector. Farmers are working hard for every bushel, and their trusted advisors are by their side. Find The Scoop Podcast wherever you find podcasts, so you are up to date on everything ag retail.
It's a mystery where Old Spice finds its amazing scents like Himalayan sea salt, but I'm thrilled they have because no other body wash exfoliates and moisturizes 24/7 like Old Spice Gentleman's Himalayan Sea Salt Body Wash. Now, if only there was a mountain range separating the Indian subcontinent from the Tibetan Plateau where I could hide my Old Spice and keep my family from stealing it, my impossibly smooth skin will finally be safe.